Welcome to These Lads on Mental. My name is Gary.
And I'm Neil, and our podcast is a lighthearted approach to normalise mental health. These Lads Are Mental recognises the Gadigal people of the Eora Nation as the custodians and traditional owners of Sydney. We pay respect to their ancestors and elders, past and present, and value their continuing connection to lands, living culture, and integral contribution to the bright and inclusive future of this beautiful city that we call home.
On this week's show, we've got the amazing Ed Jennings.
Ed is a UK native who lives here in Sydney. He's a mental health advocate. He's an elite runner. He's a triathlete. He has his own movement called the Lung Club.
This episode is an absolute cracker. We go into all things mental health, from endurance events, sleeping, recovery, and how mental health pathways are still yet to be formed.
But before we start today's show, please listen to our disclaimer. This show is just a group of opinions, and it's not to be treated as medical advice. If you are struggling with mental health, please speak to your physician or reach out to a service such as Lifeline. Thank you.
Well, looking forward to this, guys.
Yeah, it's good to get you on.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, so you tell us about you. So Camilla put me in touch with you, didn't she?
Yeah. You're a friend of Camilla's. Yeah, I'm a friend of Camilla's. Customer of Nimbus. And I'm the troll on your Google reviews, just leaving horrible messages. No, I love it. But Camilla, and she reached out and said you guys were starting this, and had a bit of a real interest in mental health for the last few years, and I guess more recently started Lung Club, and was more than happy to jump on and chew the fat.
Tell us a little bit about Ed Jennings. Obviously born and raised in Sydney with that accent, right?
Exactly, yeah.
Where are you from? And is the Lung Club, did you start the Lung Club here or was it back in the UK?
Yeah, so I started it here. Essex boy, born and bred. And then moved over here about 4.5 years ago. So I was living in London, and was kind of a bit fed up with life there and fancied a change. Luckily managed to get a move with work, and haven't really looked back. So been out here 4.5 years, working prop tech, so technology for real estate, and more interestingly, love to get out and train my lungs and help my mind. So pretty fanatic in terms of endurance sport, kind of, I guess, fueled by living somewhere where getting outside is much easier and a lot of fun. I was kind of got involved with triathlons and had a go at a few Ironmen and just got completely hooked. So
did that start when you were still in the UK, like the Lung Club part? Like, so the whole triathlon thing before
No, I was kind of like out of uni, like played team sports at uni, obviously then kind of looked for what was next to kind of fill that gap. So started doing a bit of running and did the marathon and liked it, but then always loved cycling. So I kind of started taking that a bit more seriously and then signed up for an Ironman actually just before I moved out here. So that was back in Switzerland, but thought I'll still do it. It was with a load of mates from home, and but it meant I arrived in Sydney and I had 4 months till the Ironman, so it kind of forced me to straight away just work out how to train and do it here, and that was awesome because every weekend I was cycling down to the Royal National Park or up to the Ku-ring-gai and swimming in the ocean and terrified of sharks, but to deal with all that. But it meant straight away, as soon as I got to Sydney, that kind of became what I do and what I loved here, and I guess after that, so I did one Ironman, was that was brutal, but you forget the pain pretty quickly. And I loved it. I loved the kind of structure it gave my life and, something to think about outside of the daily grind. It just got me pretty hooked pretty quickly. Added to which, I did okay in the first one, but felt like I probably could get a fair bit better at them. So then kind of decided to just throw myself into it and got a coach and trained a lot harder, and did another Ironman out here over in WA, Busselton in 2018, and did a lot better then. And basically in Ironman racing, there's one holy grail. The Mecca is going to Kona, which is the world championships in Hawaii every year. And a lot of people try and go, but you only get a certain number of slots per age group. So it's still amateur, but it's what everyone aims for if you're kind of serious in Ironman. So kind of thought, well, it'd be awesome to give that a real crack. So 2019, I was like, this is my goal. And probably became slightly unhealthily obsessed with it. You know, training weeks up to like 20, 24 hours of training a week, like 400K on the bike, 90K running, 10K swimming, plus a bit of strength, getting in the sauna.
Sponsored. Where did you go for that sauna, mate?
where exactly? What's the street address of that place? Can I ask you a question about, you know, I watched another interview you did where you kind of said there was a bit of a snowball effect with this side of fitness. You know, you do, I think you said a half marathon, and then you go, oh, that wasn't too bad. Maybe I'll do a full marathon, and then you do that.
100%.
And then did I hear right? Because you know Rory and some of the boys as well, right? Did you end up doing that weird ultra marathon thing, which was like 100 kilometers or something last year?
So I haven't done that. I did the 50, which felt long enough for me. But I mean, it is like, it's amazing how the mind works in that respect. I remember first hearing about an Ironman and being like, that is ludicrous. Like, how does a man do that or woman do that? Like, it's just, but I remember I think for me, it was like an Olympic distance triathlon. And then you understand like, okay, that's kind of how it works. And it seems crazy, but actually when you're in the flow of a triathlon, like it's not 1 + 1 + 1, like it all becomes one, like, and they kind of complement each other. Like I actually enjoy running off a bike ride almost more than just going out for a run. Like I'm warmed up and I feel a bit better in a way, but you've got to get used to it. But each one you finish always hurts. You're always like, oh, but then there's always a bit of you that's like, but I probably could, maybe. So it's a complete snowball effect. And it's the way we're made, isn't it? You're always thinking, and to our detriment sometimes, but you know, what's next? What can I do more? Whether it's in work, whether it's in sport, like, I'm not saying
I think that comes down to, I've heard a lot of, I don't know if you've heard this as well, Gary, but neuroplasticity, a lot of people are talking about that. You know, I've heard it so much in the last 12 months. But is that linked like between mind and body where, you know, like you're saying, you push yourself, you know, you got more, your mind or your whole mentality then adapts, it goes a little bit wider and then you know you can do more. Do you think some of that is down to that neuroplasticity?
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. I think there's almost like a turning point, I think, when you break a mold through a moment where you realize how much more capable you are than you realized. And that might be when you never thought you could run 10K and then you do it. And then you realize that 10K barrier you had in your head was completely fictional. And it's like, it's almost like it's a moment where you realize it's not that then I can just add 5K. It's like, really, I can do anything. And I think that's what, you know, you need to have that mind for the guys that run the 100Ks and, you know, all these ultra endurance thing. It's as much as you've got to get your body ready. It requires a mindset where you just, you know, you can get through it. And I think it probably does relate to that.
It's similar to that whole, the average of the people you hang around with, the five people you hang around with. I mean, if you wanted to get better at 100Ks, or imagine you could do 100Ks, just start hanging around with people who do 100Ks. And it sounds so simple, but that's really what happens in most places you go. Like, your standards instantly rise people you're around, because you're thinking 100K, there's no way. And like, oh, you just do this, you just train like this, you do this. And then, like you say, that just obviously you don't go from 10K to 100K, but you start to realize we're all doing it. I can do this.
Yeah.
It is interesting. I bet, what's your PB on the Ironman?
I just broke 10 hours, so 9:58.
Oh, nice, mate. What's your goal? Have you got like a wee?
I was happy with it, but like I was kind of on for like a 9:30, which might have qualified for Kona, and I completely blew up in the back half of the marathon. And so I kind of finished that being like, yeah, super happy, great PB, great one to tick off, sub 10. But I was like, there's definitely more juice in the tank there. So that was actually, they're going into 2019, I was like, this is it, here we go. That's when I got the coach, Clayton Fettel, up in Byron. And yeah, it was awesome, like really committed to it that year. And had a few good like lead-in events. And then went and did Noosa Triathlon in November. This is about a month out from the Busselton Ironman again. And I stress fractured my foot, classic David Beckham injury. came off the bike and like was like, oh, something doesn't feel right. And I was like, I'll keep running, we'll get through it. And then about 5K and I turned a corner and was like, oh no. And then all I was thinking while I was running, I was like, I could still run, but all I was thinking is there's just no chance I'm going to be starting that race in a month. And it started just like, you know, it was just,
yeah.
I mean,
isn't that the worst thing about an injury? The minute you get injured, the first 10 seconds in my mind is always the worst, because immediately you go, like, wherever you are in whatever stage or whatever sport, you just think, oh shit, I've just missed that. Oh, this is going to be at least 3 months rehab. Oh, I'm going to.
Yeah. It's all you're thinking about is how long you're going to be out for. So I came off that and I was pretty gutted. I think it made me realize, like, I just put everything into that year and, you know, like that was 100% the focus and the goal. And like, it had kind of become my identity. Like, I'd arrive at a social event and the first thing people ask you is, how's Ironman training going? And it's like, fair enough, because that's kind of all I'm doing. And you sacrifice a lot of things and, you know, a few weeks out, you're not drinking. And I kind of got to a point where it's like, I actually don't know what else to talk about, because I'm doing this thing like 24 hours a week.
Have you noticed, mate? That's what we're talking about.
But it's the same with mental health. I had the same thing with you, Ed. When you start going down that rabbit hole and you start becoming like more aware and like into something, then I felt like I'd meet any Tom, Dick and Harry on the corner of the street and go, I've got mental health and I do all these things. And then people are like, great, thanks, mate. And then start going, there is more to me than just this one thing.
So I think it put me in a worse spot, because I just became, like, I now talk about, we'll come on to Lung Club shortly, but, you know, I talk about, you know, training the lungs to help the mind and the power of exercise for our mental health in so many different ways. But that's not to say it always is the answer. And I wasn't using it the right way. Like, I literally, all I was concerned about is hitting the right numbers that week and, you know, making sure I ran, swam far enough. All I was thinking while I was running was, you know, the notification I'm going to get at the end saying I've ticked it off and I've done that and just working towards it. All I had in mind is that end goal, get to the race. Like, I've just visualized that race so often.
Do you think it's a form of addiction? You know, even though what you're doing is a positive thing, do you still think there's similarities there to addiction?
Yeah, 100%. And, you know, learning a bit more about kind of dopamine and, you know, the kind of dependence and you get on it. And also, you know, each time you do it, you need more to get the same, you know, dopamine lift. So, yeah, I do think it's addictive. But I think that's not to say you can't manage that in the right way. I just think in at that point in time, I wasn't doing it in the right way. And I think the down you get associated with the injury, and I'm sure you guys know all about that, and, you know, it's natural. But I think it was more than that. It kind of made me realize, like, let's just step back. I don't think this is sustainable. So actually at that point, I started thinking about, like, Lung Club as a kind of idea. And actually at that point, I just set up a kind of a blog post, and I wrote a bit about, you know, that year and kind of the lead up to the injury and, you know, some of the realization of that. And then just kind of, I kind of just put it on hold a bit, and it was a kind of thought that was bubbling away. But at that point, I just thought it'd be good to have a space where we can share stories about this link between the mental and physical health. Like, for me, I'd realized that year, like, they're so entwined, and most of the time for really positive reasons, but equally in some cases, you've got to be wary that it can go the other way as well.
And was your mental health specifically that drove you to creating Lung Club? Like, could you tell us a little bit about?
Yeah, for sure. So, yeah, it was. But then actually the following year, a really sad, kind of sad event then happened with a good mate back from the UK. He lost his dad to suicide. And that was in February 2019. And he dealt with it in such an incredible way. Not that there is a right or wrong way to deal with it, but I mean, the energy and the inspiration he gave me after that was insane. Like, he immediately did a huge, he was always planning on doing a big 100K run, that his dad would have been there to support him through. And He still, that was kind of a week after it happened, and he still went on and did that and decided to raise money for a charity called Sport in Mind, which is a UK charity all about helping those facing mental health illnesses through the power of sport. So he was raising money for them, and I thought that's an awesome idea, looked like a great little charity, wanted to help out. So I decided to do the cycling Everesting challenge, where you find a hill and you cycle up and down it continuously until you reach the height of Everest. So this was lockdown 2020. And so I picked a hill in Bondi, got up, went and just did it all day, about 18 hours of cycling, and a lot of people. Yeah, it was a big day. It's more than repetitive, 140 reps up Duruga Hill, if you know it, the one that goes from the corner of the golf course in Bondi just up there. I was doing that, and I was like, the main purpose was raise some money for Sport in Mind, raise some awareness. But it kind of became a lot more than that. And while I was cycling up and down, like, a lot of people came out and joined me, and we talked a lot about mental health that day. And I just thought it kind of became like a kind of epiphany in a way. Like, while I was doing it, I probably, because I was hallucinating and just so tired.
I'm picturing, it's a Forrest Gump, you know, and he goes running, and then these random
the shackles came off. So basically, whilst I was doing that, the kind of idea in my head was, there's so many amazing bits of fundraising and awareness and great charities in place for mental health. You know, there's some great stuff out there, but for me, I felt like there was maybe a missing link that was like bringing them all together. Or for me, like, you'd hear a horrible tragedy and there'd be a big fundraising effort after it, but then we'd kind of sometimes forget about it until the next tragedy happens.
Yeah.
I just thought maybe having a space, like a kind of global community that just keeps that conversation going throughout, you know, talking about issues. And really, for me, the biggest piece was just promoting that simple message that, used in the right way, sport can help in so many ways. And I guess I found, like, a lot of mental health literature, when you start looking into it, like, it can be quite overwhelming. It feels like there's a lot you could be doing for your mental health. But for me, sport kind of was one simple way of bringing in a lot of those elements. Like you mentioned earlier, if you go for a run without headphones, that can be like a real form of meditation, or, you know, you can really either think a lot about stuff or think nothing at all about anything. You know, you can use sport from a community point of view, and whether it's running with a mate, cycling with a mate. Like, for me, as an introvert, as someone who does find it quite hard to speak about how I'm feeling, sat next to someone on a bike, running next to someone, it's just, I find it so much easier. And I know a lot of people who are the same. And there's something about that kind of mutual pain you're going through, you know, and equally just not looking at someone in the eye, you know, sitting over the coffee shop table with them, or having a beer, or, you know, over Zoom like we're doing now. It's much easier if we were all just out having a run together.
You see, you see, now?
The legs are going underneath.
Legs are going 100 miles per hour.
But I think it's a really powerful tool. And I think especially these days, when as men in particular, we're famous for not sharing how we're feeling, and do find it harder a lot of the time. And a lot of the time, the most obvious place to catch up or talk about things is the pub, which also has its downsides. I think, you know, promoting doing that through sport, whether it's a walk or run, whatever it is.
Yeah, I have never really thought about it the way you've just described that it's almost like a natural remedy that's right in front of us. And often we look for the explorative answer of, you know, things like meditation, which are great as well. But in, you know, how easy is it and how accessible is running, which is, you know, maybe the cornerstone of what you do with the Lung Club, that anybody can do it. I was just thinking that when you were speaking, the nice thing about the Lung Club is that you can do it like anywhere.
Yeah.
You don't need a tool. You don't need anything, a pair of runners, shorts, preferably a t-shirt. Not on Monday, you might be all right. And away you go. And that's all you really need. And that's right at everybody's fingertips, no matter if you're doing ultra marathons or you're running for the first time. So it's actually quite amazing when you think about that.
100%.
I think as well, mate, obviously we've had a few guests on, like, we've had people who are experts in all sorts of fields, and obviously, Sully, you have Nimbus. It's got a wide range of health benefits as well. But we say it all the time, the simplest thing is usually the answer. It really is. It's a case of, for most people, the mental health aspect, like you've touched on, Ed. You said like the sporting aspect. I always remember like, the amount of times, and Sully, you can relate to this as well. Playing football here at amateur level in Sydney, your training's at 9 o'clock at night or 8 o'clock at night or whatever it may be, and you come home from work, you're knackered. You maybe have your dinner, you're sitting on the couch and you cannot be arsed leaving the house. You might have had a bad day at work and your head goes. But then you go to training and you finish training, you come home, you're absolutely buzzing, you're elated, you've been laughing at training, you've exercised, you've had a laugh at the boys and you're buzzing. Maybe you can go for a pint after whatever else, but you're absolutely, your mental health is in a completely different place and you've only been away for like 75 minutes.
Yeah.
And you've not been in a hard session, you've just been in that environment, that sporting environment. And it is so simple. Like there's no... It's not a special program or you need a coach for that. It's a case of how many community sports can you go to? You can go and play basketball at a local court. You can go, there's a million things. Even go a walk. Do you know what I mean? A big walk. I think yeah. I read the weekend, it was a quote from someone. It was like, the answer to the most, if you've got a problem, go for a walk. And if you come back and you've still got a problem, go for another one.
Yeah, it's so true. Yeah, it's just that. There's I think Andrew Huberman's talked about it as well, like optic flow, and if you're walking, you're moving, like it's calming.
Yeah,
it reduces our stress response. Like there's definitely neuroscience around it as well. But for me, like there's so many things that I know can be so powerful, but trying to squeeze them into a day sometimes feels hard. Like you know, I try my best to meditate, but you know, there can be sometimes where you just feel like I can't actually fit it all in, or you know, we're told to eat well and to you know get out and socialize and see people, and like, there's so many things that can fill our buckets. But for me, like there's one solution that can actually do quite a lot of them in a really simple way.
And with you, Ed, was there any internal battles with you and your own like psyche? Because it sounds like you know as you were going further and further, you had more goals and. If you didn't hit those goals, like what was going on then inside your head with Ed? Like, would you start beating yourself up or how did you navigate all that?
Yeah, 100%. I think I got to a point where I was tying my self-worth to my performance and to how fit I was and to how far I'd run that week. And that definitely wasn't healthy. And I think, you know, talk about living in the present and focusing on the now. And I wasn't doing that. I think that can be the real risk of, you know, these challenges and goals. I think they're a really useful tool to give you purpose and they're a really useful tool to give you an external kind of motivation. But I think you've also got to be aware that actually it's irrelevant whether you succeed in that or not. It's the journey is what it's all about. And I'd really do my best now to harness that and actually like whatever you're doing, if you're out for a run or a swim, like just enjoy that for what it is, because we're lucky to be able to move. And I find it much more powerful to be able to just enjoy those individual workouts. And that if you're working towards something great and get out and enjoy, like I still enjoy competing and enjoy racing. And I hope to do that for a while, but it's irrelevant if you can't enjoy the process and that journey towards the goal.
And what about the group mentality? I think Gary, you're saying it wrong. Like if you're in a group, you kind of tend to push each other. And then, you know, I don't know if you're part of that. Scott, who, you know, is a mutual friend, added me to some training group, which I was like, okay, cool. And then I was in there with all these other triathletes and I was like, oh shit. And then
Scott, you've added me to the wrong group, mate.
He was like, oh, you'll be fine. And I was like, okay, I can barely swim, but like, put me in there, see how I go. And then everyone was like, oh, but what I thought was great about that was someone would put in a post going, hey, I'm going for a jog like in 20 minutes, anyone keen? And all these other people go, actually, yeah, I might actually join you. And then all of a sudden there's like a group of five of them would go off to a run. Like, are you in that group first and foremost? And like, do you think that group mentality helps you overall as a person?
Yeah, I definitely do. I'm not in that group, but I think it's really, and I think you've seen it, like the growth of these grassroots community sports clubs seems amazing. We're part of a broader group called More Than a Run, which is an event for November. And the guys have pulled together like well over 100 run clubs all around Sydney, Australia and New Zealand. And it just shows like all it really is starts off with a group of mates who say, you know, we love doing this. Let's throw the invite out, and if people want to join, then great. And you know, look at like a group like Bondi Salties, who swim every Friday morning, and they do a bay, and it's now like 150 people go to that on a Friday morning. And it just shows like the community element is so important. So important.
Can I just mention the Bondi Salties? Because I used to live beside Brew, the cafe.
Oh, it's a nightmare.
And I was like, it would literally wake you up at 6 a.m. every Friday. And I'd be like, oh, there's the swimmers again. And then yeah. I'm like, if you didn't get out before them, you'd have to wait an hour to get a coffee. Like, you know,
you were the one putting out shark reports, being like, oh, guys, they can't swim today.
Yeah, council. I was putting all these, like, you know, complaints into the council and whatnot.
Yeah.
God, you hear that? Like, it sounds like such a first world problem. I couldn't get my coffee for like an hour. Like, oh,
that is a first world problem.
Yeah.
I think it's interesting as well to talk about. Obviously, we're talking about a lot of things in terms of being aware of your own mental health and being aware of like mental health awareness in general. But something that Sully mentions quite a lot is the pathways for mental health. And I do think it's interesting, even what we're doing on this podcast is, I'll try to bring awareness to it, but I still think, like, and you just touched on it, Ed, it's almost like something happens and it's like, oh, mental health, or it's Movember and everyone pushes for it, and then it's just kind of like nothing, and then, oh, did you hear about such and such, this happened to them, or they're hit in a bad headspace, or something happens on a new, like Tyson Fury, he went through his mental health and he was on Joe Rogan and all the rest of it, lots of awareness again, but then it's like, oh, what's really as much changed in terms of, like, and Sully always uses the analogy, like, if you get injured, say you're doing a race or whatever it may be, and you pulled your hamstring, you go, right, okay, I'll go and see the physio. Physio give me a rehab plan, week 1 to week 12, and then I'm here, and then I'll go back to my return to train, and then my return to play, and then you know where you are.
Yeah.
The mental health, there isn't anything really of like you said, there's lots of things you can do, and obviously it's going to be very individual what works for you, but where do you go? Like, where do you go? There is so many options still. Like, you can go to, you can call somebody, you can go to a friend, you can meditate, all these trials, a lot of things, but what is the pathway? And are we ever going to get to a path? Is there ever going to be a pathway? Or is it always just going to be awareness?
No, I think it's a really good point. And I think it's like, especially thinking around, you know, we think often when we talk about mental health, we think of that, you know, bottom end of the spectrum of like someone who's really struggling, anxiety, depression, you know, in a really dark place. But ultimately mental health is the whole spectrum of mental health. It's more an awareness around how we're feeling on a daily basis. And I think, you know, there's definitely different pathways that you need to kind of, first of all, be aware of, so you can pursue the right activities and the right journey depending on how you're feeling. Like, you know, therapy is a great tool. It might not be right for everyone depending on where they're at in their own journey, but understanding that help is there if you feel you need it is a really important element. I think the awareness around that and destigmatizing that has got to be up there near the top of the list in terms of our priorities. And especially I think in amongst males, understanding that, you know, there's no weakness in seeking out help for that kind of stuff is really important. But I think also it's just getting those little habits in place that help you on a daily basis. And if that's, you know, 5 minutes of mindfulness, if that's, you know, running 3 times a week, like, it's the consistency and approach to that I think is really powerful. Because I think actually, you know, we give a lot of attention towards, you know, those suffering or the, you know, the more severe end of the spectrum. But I think there's increasingly, you know, a struggle for people who might not ever, you know, experience deep depression, but might, you know, have a daily grind and something that just nicks away at them every day. But if you're facing something like that, you know, over a number of years, that can just wear you down in a similar way. So I think it's that kind of understanding the small tweaks you can make on a daily basis and the small options that help you feel better is a pretty powerful thing to get you on the right journey as well.
And Ed, have you found with the Lung Club, when you're out with the guys, and is it just guys that you work with?
No, guys and girls. Yeah.
Guys and girls. Yeah. Do you find that people are more vulnerable when they're like out on the road, like when you're chatting? Do you think that people open up rather than they would, let's say, if they were just, you know, meeting you for coffee?
I really do. Yeah. This is, I think, like one of the biggest things about it. I feel like people, and you know, maybe because if you're running with Lung Club, you feel it's a group revolving around mental health and exercise, so maybe that helps as well. But I think generally, I think just running with someone and just being in that same rhythm of movement, it kind of takes the barriers away. it doesn't feel forced. You know, you go out for a catch up with someone and you're kind of like, it can feel kind of under pressure. Like you've got an hour to catch up with someone and you've got to go through the stuff. You've got to go through how's work, how's family. It's like a checklist. Whereas you're running, you're not coming with any pretense of like, I'm here to talk about, you know, the big pitch I've got to do next week. It's there to, you can sit in silence just as happily.
Yeah.
And I think that's what's quite nice about it.
It's also, yeah, even if you are on your own, it's quite meditative for me whenever I go running. I know a lot of people say, oh, I hate running. But my answer to anyone that says that normally is like, if you start running, no matter what pace it is, after a while, because it was a brief period of my life where I got into running and I was running competitively, but only short distances. And it became like, I used to call it like the drug. And then when I used to start running, you get into this thing that I used to call autopilot. So after you run a few kilometers, you have this pace and you can literally, I felt like I was in my armchair where I could just keep going at this pace forever. And when you start doing that, you're literally bringing your own walls down. And then it was a really nice place to think about things that maybe you couldn't even get to yourself, never mind like somebody else. Have you found that yourself, like when you're on your own, does it take you to places of your own thoughts that maybe you can't get to in everyday life?
Yeah, massively. I think it's a good point around like the pace you run at as well, because I definitely used to, every time I thought you go for a run, to go for a hard workout. So I just used to go out pretty much as hard as I could, and you run for a half an hour, 40 minutes, and then you're dead. And it's still, you know, there's a lot of value in that. But for me, understanding slow running and zone two training and being able to run at a talking pace, and that just opens up a whole world of possibilities. And that's when you can start running further. And for me, yeah, that's definitely where I get myself into a much more calm headspace. Like, I don't think I think about anything, funnily enough. Like, sometimes I think I'll go for a run and, you know, think about what I've got to do that day. And actually, as soon as I start running, I can't think about anything. I find the same with cycling. Like, and I think that's the, whereas if I sit down and try and meditate, that's suddenly when all the thoughts come to the front of my head, and it's often a bit of a battle to find that headspace. Whereas when I'm exercising, I don't actually have to think. It's just my mind just kind of, yeah, goes to another place.
Just thinking about your routine, because Gary's very well mastered in the arts of, like, you know, everything that goes into a healthy routine, whether it's sleep, you know, food and things like that. As you were kind of progressing through your own, like, let's say, you know, because I was kind of laughing it around to myself, thinking Gary was like, you know, if you go for a walk, if you're still stressed, go for another walk. But I was like, probably in Ed's case, it was like, I'll go for a run. If you're still stressed, go for a longer run. If you're still stressed, try a marathon. Then it keeps going.
But, yeah.
How did the whole, like, did you get like into the whole sleep, eat, you know, how did that happen? And like, was that challenging? Like, did you have to like increase your calories as you're doing all this? Like, did it get to any unhealthy places where, because when you run, you lose weight a lot. And
yeah,
when I used to run, people used to say, God, you look awful. You must be fit. that's like a saying.
It's true though.
That's a saying in the running world. Like, oh, you look awful. You must be in great shape because, you know, you lose the weight. I got down to like 9% body fat at one point, and it, but then it started like playing with my insecurities a bit, because you'd meet someone and they go, oh, you're really skinny. And then you'd be called skinny. And then
I feel amazing.
It's definitely, I remember there's a photo of the day I broke my foot on that race, and my face is so gaunt. And it's not that attractive, but that's a chat. I mean, it depends what you're doing as well. Like, if you're Ironman training, you've got to take in a lot of calories because you're burning a lot. But then it can be an unhealthy kind of environment as well. Like, you kind of aim for that very lean physique, I think, probably in that kind of racing. You judge competitors by how many veins are in their legs and all that kind of stuff. So probably not the healthiest, but I think now the good thing for me about exercise is, for me, it solves the sleep component. Like, if I've trained hard that day, I get into a better sleeping rhythm. If I know I'm going to get up at 5:30 in the morning, go for a run, like, I've managed to go to bed earlier. And for me, it's kind of the pillar of that healthy routine. And I think, eating kind of goes into that category as well of, you know, you kind of think maybe a bit more. I mean, I wouldn't say I'm particularly careful about what I eat, but definitely feel it all adds into that one bucket of trying to look after yourself in the best way possible.
Yeah, that's what one of the things, and then sort of I've touched on this with you, is like throughout the years, again, there's so much information on sports science and health and et cetera, et cetera. But I've always tried to look at the simplest possible things. And I've mentioned this to Silly, the way I do it with players or whoever I'm working with is just, I call it brain, eat, sleep and train, just BEST for best. And I always say to people, I'm not expecting you to fix your mindset, eat amazing, sleep amazing, train amazing, because the chances are by doing just one of those things, it will unlock the rest of them. So chances are you're not shit at all of those things. You might be training already and the training routine might be absolutely fine, but you might be sleeping shit, which in turn is making your nutrition shit because you're waking up tired and you're getting lazy and picking an easy option, which in turn is making your mind wander and do things you're not happy with yourself. I was like, get to bed early, fix your sleep routine. You'll probably find you make better nutrition choices because you're already training well. And then that can happen for any one of those things. Tends to fix one thing and it has that knock-on effect. And in most cases, I'm sure there's some cases that's not the point, but the point is thinking, getting overwhelmed of like, I'm overweight, I'm out of shape, I'm not sleeping well, I'm stressed, I'm not eating well, what do I fit? I need to fix all this stuff. And it gets overwhelmed. It's like a case of one thing at a time here. Just fix the lowest hanging fruit. And it usually is sleep. Sleep's usually the lowest hanging fruit. Yeah. If you're someone who loves exercise like yourself, training might be the lowest hanging fruit. And then you go, well, I'm going to sleep better anyway because I'm training. Yeah. And my run was shit yesterday, so I'll maybe be taking a better care of my breakfast because I know I'm going to run later. And then after the run, I feel better. And you've just ticked off all the boxes.
Yeah, that's a really good approach.
I also, I think your whole journey, Ed, is a really good analogy of what you just said there, Gary, because let's say the first time you went on whatever it was, a run or a swim, where you thought, maybe I might, pursue this a little bit further. If someone had said to you then, oh, you're going to try and do Kona, in 3 years' time, you'd probably tell them to piss off. It's a little bit like that with mental health. You know, if you think about your journey and getting to feel better or recovery or whatnot, the pathway can seem long. But if you just take it one step at a time, one race at a time, let's say, to use your story, you can get there. And it if you break it into chunks, like what you were saying, Gary, start with one breakfast, it might be, and then that can just snowball into something else. And then it can be less daunting then, you know?
Yeah. I think it's so easy to jump ahead to that end goal and just think it's all hopeless because how would we ever get there? But you're so right. Just picking it off day by day. It's like the old, you don't get materially fitter by one amazing workout. It's like 60 good workouts consecutively and consistency. It's consistency is king. And I think that's, there's a tendency to jump and just think, I won't train all week and I'll just go and do a massive thing at the weekend, or I'll just have one really healthy day. Or
that's what Gary says. Gary's always like, when people come back from injury recovery, they're like, right, I feel better now, I'll go for like a 10K run.
Yeah,
I did a little thing on my social media, but that was like the comment, like the absolute bog standard amateur footballer. I'm like, right, mate, pre-season's coming up, I want to get fit. And I'm like, right, okay, take it easy. They'll go to a 10K run, or they'll go and do some sort of doggies shuttle thing, lactic acid based. Come back, bit heavy today, more than in 15 months, but we go again next day, same workout, they're battered again. Third day, same again. Hammy's a bit tight, I'll go again. And it's like week two, Hammy goes. And they're like, gutted, four-week rehab. And they'll do their four-week rehab, we'll come back. Physio said I've done too much. First day back after the four-week rehab. Right, 10K run, here we go again. I was like, what the fuck? Just this constant, I need to go. And it holds true to what you said, mate, the zone two running. That is, to me, is the bread and butter of most of it, even for the footballers. Because obviously footballers are doing a lot of technical training. So they're sort of in that zone two naturally by doing the warm-up, the passing work, etc.
Yeah. But
when I get players, and they'll say, for instance, say they're amateur players and they're stressed out, or they're not at work and they've got high paying jobs, there's a lot of stress involved, they've got football, they've got a family. And I'll say, I want to do extra running. I'll be like, cool, and I'll give them some zone two work, whatever it may be. And they'll be like, I tried that zone two, my heart rate, too hard to stay in heart rate, so I just went for it. I'm like, that's the point, mate. The point is you're getting work in, but not actually stressing your system. And it's actually, if anything, it's actually helping you recover, but you're still getting work in. Nah, I can't do it, mate. I just wanted to try and get a peep. And I just cannot imagine the fact
break free that, of that. Yeah.
At the end of it, or absolutely knackered, that he's doing anything. I'm like,
yeah.
Well, I'm trying to much telling you, mate, that if you do this, you're going to be fitter, feel better, and be ready to train hard when you have to train hard. Nah.
No.
Okay, cool.
You're right. It's so, it's equally, so many, I think, runners especially probably just getting that hit that gray space of like, you don't run slow enough to properly just be in your aerobic zone. Uh-huh. And so you end up, but you're not running like max like speed either. And I think you just, the danger of training in that gray zone, way better off like either run slow or have a session a week where you do some intervals and get the heart rate pumping. But it's taken to me a long time to get my head around it too, to be fair.
That reminds me, you know, like it's like really old school mentality that as well, Gary, where, you know, you go train. And I used to play for a club in Ireland called Wayside Celtic, and they were up in the mountains. And on a Tuesday, they'd bring their footballs over, they'd leave them on the side of the pitch, and then they'd be like, take a look at them lads, because you're not going to go near them for the whole night. And we'd be like, okay, cool. And like, you might have won a game 5-0 on the weekend. So you think coming into training, this would be great. Like, you know, everyone's pumping. And because they're on the mountains, they used to make us run this thing called the dingle, which was like this uphill thing in a cow patch. So lads would be like twisting their ankles and like all kinds of stuff, like getting stung by bees. But it was it was all like part of the thing. And then I was like, say 18 or so. So you're like maybe since school, you're playing on a few different teams. So you're already doing heaps of training. And then I'll never forget, I kind of like had a sore hamstring, like you were saying, Gary. I went up to train and they were like, well, you're not pulling out of training. And I was, they were like, if you pull out of training, like, you're not going to play. And I was, well, my hamstring's sore. And I literally, they forced me to train. And then like later on, I found out I ruptured my hamstring because they literally, like, it was a, like an ego thing or whatever, like bravado, like, you know, you're a pussy if you pull out of training, like, you know, what's wrong with you? You know, this kind of thing. And I still have a ball on my hamstring now, which is ruptured. And whenever I ever go to see a physio, like, whatever happened to that? I was like, well, the mountain running.
Dingle.
Yeah, the dingle.
Brilliant, man. One thing I wanted to talk to you about, Ed, as well, was I noticed on the Lung Club website, you mentioned the World Health Organization, about a prediction of 2030, the year where suicide is likely to be the number one cause of death. Mm. That's pretty hard hitting. I mean, touch on what we've already spoke about in terms of mental health pathways and all the rest of it. So, I mean, what the Lung Club's brilliant what you're doing, mate. So how do you see your place or the Lung Club's place in fighting that to not be the case?
Yeah, I think first and foremost, like, I want to raise awareness as much as possible, just to let people know that really there's a simple first step to make, and by embracing movement, I think it's the most powerful thing you can do to set yourself on the right track. And I think the other element of it is, you know, surfacing these stories that are already happening all over the world, like as we mentioned before, amazing, you know, fundraising and awareness, whether it's around Are You Okay Day in November. And I feel like we've got a calendar now that's really well programmed, really, to keep mental health quite near the top of the list a lot of the time. But for me, like, going on to a mental health charity's website and reading about some, you know, ideas around how to help your mental health, I don't find that easy to relate to. But hearing about stories and hearing about what someone else has gone through, that's where I really feel like I get value. And so I think I definitely like to keep pushing into and keep growing Lung Club to be able to share those stories as much as possible. You know, even one day being able to, you know, have the website set up so you could go in and see, you know, filter potentially by what you're going through at the moment, and then have a load of kind of real life stories of what other people are going through and have been through. Because for me, that was so powerful. Like, you know, thinking about when I've struggled, and then as soon as you hear that someone else has gone through the same thing, it does make you feel a bit lighter. Like, you don't feel quite so alone and in that journey. And so I think the more we can do around that as well, the better. And then always keeping that community element, and, you know, as we've all mentioned, like, the energy you get from meeting up with a few people and going for a run, going for a swim, like, there's so much in that. And I think we're very lucky in Sydney of how accessible that is, and I think there's a lot of places around the world where that's probably not as easy. And I think there's more we can encourage people to set up their own little groups and run groups and whatever it is, just as a simple way weekly to check in with someone, is often a better way than, you know, going out for a beer. Or not that that's always bad, but, you know, it's good to keep a variety of options open.
I know it's weird. Sometimes you can get in your own head, right, where you think, because I, you know, I'm Bondi here, and sometimes I do pinch myself and go, almost you feel like, how can I be depressed? Like, look at this place. Like, it's unreal. Like, as you're saying, yeah, I can put my toes in sand within 3 minutes of my home and, you know, coffee shops on your doorstep. Like, it's like, we are so lucky, but unfortunately sometimes whatever you're dealing with in your own head is relative. And, you know, I was chatting to a guy only this week who was saying that, like, he gets suicidal thoughts every day. And when he was telling me this, I was like, fucking, like, I don't mean to laugh, but I was just thinking to myself, fuck, I'm, you know, I get stressed about, I don't know, something silly, like speaking to somebody in a group, whereas like, he has suicidal thoughts every day. And this fella was like in his 60s and he's still there, you know? So it's kind of like, sometimes you think, God, you know, my problems in reality are only about here, where others are up here, but you make them like seem like they're just as bad as everything else.
Yeah.
So maybe, yeah, I don't know what the advice is there, but, you know, not to belittle anyone's issues.
Exactly. I think that's the biggest thing. It's like, I've had the same thing where, you know, you pinch yourself and you're like, God, I've got a job, in a relationship, live in Sydney, like this, you tick it all and you're like, oh, how could I ever possibly feel sad? But of course, that's not the case. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it really is, you know, you shouldn't belittle your own concerns and worries because you feel like they're nothing compared to someone else's. Like, ultimately, you know, the mind isn't very good at having that relativity all the time, and everything is just as valid. So yeah, I think that's definitely something to be wary of.
And there's something on your upper lip there, we noticed earlier on as well. Like, is that the mo? Is that a common
thing?
That's
the mo.
Do you do it once a year?
Well, no, usually I do it and then I actually persuade myself that I look better with it. So then just leave it hanging on for too many months of the year. But now I am fundraising for Movember. So obviously building to this more than a run event. At the end of the month, we're going to be running 60K from Bondi to Manly.
Oh, lovely.
Which will be good. And as I said, yeah, groups all across Sydney taking part. So that'll be really cool. And I think they're up to $200,000 raised actually across the whole spectrum of the group. So awesome initiative. And yeah, I love Movember. I think it's such a, it just comes down to that awareness and, you know, making men realize that vulnerability isn't weakness, I think is really powerful. And I love the fact that it actually, you know, speaks to Lung Club in linking, you know, physical and mental elements of men's health together. Across, you know, testicular, prostate cancer, and mental health and suicide prevention. So I'm closely aligned with what they're doing, and I think it's awesome.
What's funny with, like, let's say Lung Club or even running or any kind of sports, even though it's physical, quite often it's down to your mental side as well. So they're actually intrinsically linked both ways. Like, if you're out on a run most of the time, well, I think I read some statistic before that scientifically, if you feel tired, you have at least 30%, I think, more in the tank, like physically, before your body would give up. And quite often it's just getting in your own head, like, oh, can I do another lap? Can I go that extra yard? And most of it's in your head, right? It's not even the physicality aside of it.
Yeah. I think it was a Navy SEALs. I remember reading that. It was some guy, went, I think it's a journalist, went to live with a Navy SEAL for like a month. And he said to him, I mean, obviously the numbers are just guesses, but I think he said 40%, it's like 40%. He's like, he made him sleep on a hard, like his floor, wake him up at 4 o'clock in the morning. He's like, let's go and run outside. He's like, it's snowing outside, let's go. He's like, but the amount of times I was going to quit, then about 6 hours later, I would actually finish what we were doing. And he just made me realize, like, I was never anywhere close to finishing what I said. Yeah. But I do think it's interesting having you on it, because most people we've spoke to so far, I mean, like you said, mental health, you often automatically think of, oh, depression or something's bad happening in your life, or suicidal thoughts, and you think of that end spectrum. But a really simple thing, which I think is very relevant to where we live, and I'm not sure where you are, Ed, but we're Eastern Suburbs. Is that where you are as well?
Yeah. Suburbs.
There's a big fitness fanatic culture, and everyone is very obsessive over aesthetics and what other people are doing and the whole social media thing. And there's not, I don't think we spoke to anyone who's just, it's a very simple thing of, I'm sure a lot of people are going through, is become obsessed with what would naturally be seen as a healthy thing. I'm obsessed with exercise, I'm obsessed with hitting goals. Like that, to me, like, oh, that's amazing. But you're like, no, it wasn't amazing. That's very, I think that's interesting. So it's good, really good insight.
Yeah, no, I think it's, I think it's an adjustment. Like a lot of people probably, you know, we're always focused on, I think there's so much literature as well around how can you be your best self? You know, all the non-fiction books that just swarm the top tens now are around, you know, being better habits, etc. And, you know, there's a lot of value in them, but I do think it's the impact on society is that we're constantly thinking that we're not good enough. Like we're always got to do more. We've got to run faster. We've got to, whatever area of life it's in. And I think, you know, a lot of the time, you're enough already. You don't need to always be getting better and just embracing, giving yourself some self-compassion and self-love.
Yeah, I think there's definitely danger with all of that, Gary, as well, you know, where, and especially now with like Instagram and influencers and all that kind of stuff, where you'd see somebody pumping out some message on Instagram, and sometimes I would maybe know who that person is or indirectly, and I know that like what's going on in their own life isn't actually accurate to what they're showing, but to their followers they're like, I do this and I do that. And then I know, well, then I know they're not eating correctly, or they're, you know, being obsessive about their, you know, training and things like that. So like, there is that kind of real danger of going the total other end of things. And, you know, you take one walk along Bondi Strand, the outdoor gym, and, you know, everyone there is like absolutely shredded. And, you know, it can be daunting even, you know, like I feel like I've gone to a gym my whole life, like, and all I do is train. Like I can just never get to the levels of these folks. But they must, what you don't see, I suppose, is the sacrifices that they probably have to do in order to be like that. You know, whether it's I'm only guessing here, but you know, relationships, or they probably have insane dietary plans and things like that. And you know, that's not for everyone, you know, like there are some things like, you know, I love a chocolate, cup of tea, things like that. And it can set these really dangerous like goals for you to kind of go like, and then in yourself, you never feel content. Or like every year, I don't know if anyone that's listening, I always go, right, summer's coming, need to get the body in shape. Like just so you don't feel embarrassed taking your shirt off. And like Jonah Hill, who's like the Hollywood actor. Is that Jonah Hill? Yeah, I have that right. Yeah, he's like an amazing bloke. I actually would recommend anyone following him on Instagram, mainly because he's so, well, it's not that like his body image is carried with him for most of his life, and like unfairly in many cases, because, you know, people are like, what's it like to be the overweight guy kind of thing? And that's what he was known for. And he puts out some really positive messaging around body image and taking your shirt off, and how that actually like carried with him for most of his life. And it sounds like where he's at now, he's coming to terms with all that. And but quite often by people reaching out and telling him things doesn't actually help his scenario at all. What he actually needs is people to not reach out to him and not make a thing of it, because that's what like put him on that path.
Yeah.
So yeah, body image is like a whole nother topic. But like, do you come across that yourself, or have you had struggles with that, even your own self? Like, oh, I'm not as fit as I could be.
Yeah, I definitely have. And I think actually, you know, I've trained hard, but I've never had a six pack. You've always been a bit embarrassed of my body a lot of the time. And there's definitely been links there where it's like, how can this be happening? Like I'm putting all these hours in and I'm not the most ripped bloke. And I'm okay with it now, and I've definitely been able to come to terms with it. But there was a period where it didn't match up with this whole image I'd had in my head of, you know, elite Ironman competitor, and I was still carrying around a bit of a belly, and like, yeah, I found it tough. And I think that's
and isn't that mad, like where you're a triathlete, like even if you just like, you are a triathlete,
yeah,
like and yet still like you might be going, I need that extra like six pack or whatever. Like
that's a perception. I mean, it's so fucked up about the fitness industry, health and fitness industry right now, is health and fitness to people as being either massive, like ridiculously huge,
yeah,
or being ridiculously lean, which oftentimes the people who you see are ridiculously lean are potentially competitors who are being lean as
well.
And they only do that for, they're peaking for that point, and other times they're not looking like that because you cannot sustain that. That's it. Oh, you see a celebrity, a Hollywood actor who then gets into those shape, and everyone's like, oh, have you seen him in that movie? Then 4 months later, they'll come out and say, that was the worst time in my life. Like, I hated it. It was terrible. But that's, to me, working with different athletes and seeing different athletes, some of the best athletes in the world are not. Look at Tyson Fury, he's the heavyweight champion of the world.
Yeah.
You watch a UFC fight as well. You see UFC fighters, I mean, they're in good nick, but you're not going to look at someone on the top of and go, like, oh, he must be some athlete. Like, it's a completely different realm, performance, and it's going to be mental performance. Some of these guys are, no, Novak Djokovic, by no means is he going to be shredded, but he's clean, psychologically, pinnacle of elite mental health performance, one of the best athletes of all time. Tiger Woods, like, you go through, how many sports can you go through?
Yeah.
Not ripped. It's a completely, it depends what you want. Performance and aesthetics are just, but now people are trying to merge them both together, and they're completely different things, and people think you need a six-pack to be healthy or fit. It's fucking insane. It is insane. You think you need a six-pack. I know people who don't do nothing, and if you get six-packs, just by genetics.
Yeah.
Look at all the, like, if you think of all the old footballers in England, like Mathieu Letizier, Gazza, like those guys, unbelievably talented players in their own right. Like, I, like, never had a six-pack in their life, you know? And then there was, what was that guy in the UFC, the American guy with the blonde hair? He looked like a kind of a prep boy, and he had, like, shredded, and he was supposed to be the next big thing. Can't remember his name. And he got through a few, like, wins and stuff, and then he just got absolutely battered by someone when he got to, like, the top end of town. And I was just like, now his body was like a, you know, he was like an Adonis. But I actually was going to ask you, Gary, where do you stand? Because, like, I feel like sometimes, like, where did genetics play a role in this? Because some, I know people who are absolutely shredded. They don't train that much. They eat what they want, you know, and they just still look unbelievably shredded. Like, do you think genetics plays a role in that? And, like, some people just have it, some people that don't. And if you don't, like, don't get beat up about it.
Yeah, oh, genetics definitely play a role, mate. There's a good book, if you're interested, called Sports Gene, which is a very, very good book to read, because I'm a wee bit deeper about that as well. But of course, mate, like, I mean, I can only talk it from an athletic standpoint mainly, is speed is the most common wanted thing in sport. And I've got some players who are obsessed with getting faster, and they can get faster. There's a million ways you can get faster. But there's boys who could be in the same team as them who haven't ever really trained speed, but they're fucking shit off a shovel. They're rapid. And I'm like, there's no point in trying to be faster than that guy, because you're just not going to be faster than that guy. It's just, that's just his genetics. He's got the fast twitch fibers. Not to say you can't be faster, but everyone's got different strengths and weaknesses. Your position might be different from him, and you can only play the cards you're dealt at the end of the day. So at the same time, if you know a mate who does nothing and he's always shredded, then fair play, man. Like, it is what it is. Somebody genetically have to fight a different fight, but you've got things in your locker that probably you don't even know. They're looking at you going, I wish I had that, and they're fighting to get that as well. It's just like, you're on a vicious cycle of just not being content with the war it is, and not to say you can't improve anything, you can't get faster, you can't get leaner, you can't, of course you can get a six pack, of course you can get faster, but trying to fight genetics is a losing battle at the end of the day. I remember reading this, hearing a story, I can't remember what it was a really good podcast, and it was talking about, it was in America. What was that?
Not this podcast then.
This is terrible. Some guy in America, his son wanted to be NFL football, I was in it. Want to be an NFL athlete. So he goes to the S&C coach, and obviously it's huge over there. And he goes to the S&C coach, oh, my son wants to play, plays running back, X, Y, Z, wants to do this. And S&C coach looked at him straight away and says, look, he's not going to be an NFL footballer. And he's like 14, 15. And his dad's like, what do you mean he does this? He's like, I can just tell, like, I've worked with thousands of NFL footballers. He's got nothing and, like, nothing, no attributes of an NFL footballer. Like, physically, it just won't be. Goes, but I'll tell you what, he could definitely be a basketball player. The way he's built, the size of him, the way he's going to sort of develop, he's obviously just passed his growth spot, and the guy's looking at him. His dad's like, nah. But obviously in America, you play different sports, so you've got that sort of multi-sport background. He's like, I'm telling you, throw him back into basketball. He's got all the attributes of an NBA prospect. And then it was like 7 years. I'll try and find the podcast, and I'll put it on the Instagram if I can find who the guy was. He became a professional NBA player.
Really? Wow.
And it was like, but dad was an NFL fan, loved NFL, wanted his son to be NFL, played him American football. But the S&C coach said to him, look, I can put him in this pathway and I can make him obviously more athletic. But he's going to get butchered when it comes to the physical, because there's obviously a physical aspect massive in NFL. He's like, but if I put him in basketball, he could thrive. I'm not going to say he's going to be professional, but he's got the height, he's got the build, he's got the agility, the way he moves, his hand-eye coordination, everything's there. And it's just crazy to think, like, that guy's dad's trying to fight genetics.
Yeah.
It's just not going to happen. It's just not built for it.
You can see a parallel with, you know, just think about mental health again as well. Like, probably the cause for so much kind of stress and worry, and you know, people not feeling as good as they can be is half the time not being in your right slot. You know, as you said, like, we're all made differently, and we've all got hundreds of strengths that other people probably can't do. But you know, it probably stems from when we're younger, and you know, so many people get funneled into a way of life, into a career, which just might not be right for them. And I think, you know, the more attention we can give to young people and get understanding their skill sets and what they want out of life, and what they can be good at, and getting them on the right path earlier, I'm sure is going to be a way to help as well.
That's a really good point.
Yeah, because I like, meditation for me was, for some reason, that thing where I thought, oh, if I could just do that meditation course, save up that money, do it, it's going to fix me. And then it didn't. Like, I mean, it definitely helps, but it wasn't that silver bullet that I was kind of looking for. And yeah, I don't think that's like necessarily out there. Well, or, you know, it can be one thing for you versus one thing for me. But I wanted to ask you maybe as one last question, Ed, thinking of mental health, like, in the future, like, if money wasn't an issue, but it's not really like a money thing, do you have one vision of mental health? Like, let's say fast forward to the WHO organization and what they're saying, like, where is euphoria first? Where is that kind of like golden pasture? Like, any ideas or where we could get to maybe in the future?
Oh, it's a hard one. I think it really comes down to not actually, you know, a program or an access to anything different other than, you know, a more widespread social acceptance and more widespread destigmatized state. I think, you know, it's great how much we're talking about it and the way that awareness is lifting. But I think euphoria and the best place it can get is when, you know, open conversations are happening, not just in pockets of more, you know, educated areas, or, you know, I'm sure there's still so many pockets around the world where it's still not okay to talk about, you know, talking to, you know, there's a lot of international employees at my job and hearing about the state of affairs in their various home countries, and it's still not okay to really open up and share how you're feeling. And I think if we can get to a point where that's a ubiquitous right, that if you're feeling crap you can talk about it in a healthy environment, then we're certainly going to be in a better spot.
Very well said. Yeah, because we often forget that we're here sitting in Australia, which is maybe arguably one of the better places in the world to be if you've got any kind of mental health condition whatsoever, never mind other places where, as you were saying, like, if you would actually openly speak about it, you know, your life would be impacted negatively, like, a lot more than it would be, let's say, from where we are today. So yeah, we also have to recognize that it's at various different stages globally, you know. So hopefully the likes of WHO and other organizations internationally can put things together, you know, to help us all.
100%.
Well, I did a quick fire questions.
Yeah, so just normally to finish out, we have these like quick fire questions. So we kind of throw them at you. So don't think too much about them. So first thing that comes to mind.
Yeah.
No answer is wrong answer. So to start, we always ask, so when are you at your most happiest?
10K into a long run.
I was going to say, I think I might know the answer to this.
I've broken through the hard first, you know, 10K when you're a bit sore, and I'm now just like cruising along in my happy spot.
Nice.
In terms of the world, where do you think we are out of 10 for mental health? In terms of the world, where do you think we are out of 10 in terms of mental health awareness?
I'm going to be overall positive and give us a 7. Still a lot of room for growth, but in the world as I see it, I see a lot of positivity.
Nice. And in terms of your own mental health, where do you think that is out of 10 right now?
I'd say always room for growth. I'm probably at an 8.
Nice. Very good. And then the final one is, if you did have one silver bullet, what would you recommend to people out there if they could do one thing a day to improve their own mental health?
I'd say buddy up and go for a walk.
Lovely.
I think it's the most global. I mean, I love running, but it's not about the heart rate being high necessarily. Just walking me and my partner try, and that was a great thing about lockdown, like every morning, just get out for a walk, grab a coffee at the end of it. And, you know, equally, it's not so daunting, like get up, start your day an hour earlier. Sometimes getting up to go for a run can feel like that's hard to get out of bed for, but just roll out of bed and go for a walk is just a really nice way to kick off the day and gives you some good headspace.
And if not a walk, try 5K run. If not 5K, try 10K.
Yeah, yeah.
And do a half marathon. If that doesn't
work. It's still not working, start again.
But I was actually only thinking about this morning. You made a really good point. And we've heard it before where like the micro moves make macro changes. And I'm in this a little bit myself at the moment. I'm not just getting up as early as I would like to. But if you just do it one day, that will snowball into the next day. So I'm kind of trying to psych my own self out and go, right, tomorrow I'll try and get up at 6 a.m. Because if you get up at 8 a.m., there's 2 hours of your day already gone where you've missed out on that walk, and then you're on the clock, and then you're trying to get stuff done, and then it just kind of spirals, you know?
Yeah, 100%. That old 5 a.m. club book is a good one. And you do, you feel like you get a window of your life that otherwise you just don't get. And if you don't, you can try and say, I'll back end it and I'll have some time at the end of the day. But it's not the same as being up when the sun's coming up and squeezing it in before the rest of the world comes at you with emails, with requests, with everything you've got to do in your life that day. You've already won it, and you've already had that little window to do what you want with it rather than be bombarded.
At that time between 5 o'clock and say 7 o'clock in the morning, I absolutely love it. Because where I live in Alexandria, and just, like right now you'll hear traffic going past. Along Houston Road, but between 5 and 7, there's nothing. There's no people in the street. There's not. It's just silence. I don't check my phone. Sometimes I just sit in the balcony. Sometimes I go for a walk. But it's just. It's almost like it's just me in the world walking around.
Yeah.
And I'm like, there's no other time in the day I'll get this. It's brilliant.
And once you've done it for a week, you go to bed at 9 and you're falling asleep easily, and you know you're in that rhythm. First few days, it's obviously a bit hard to adjust.
I'm like, fuck's sake.
Yeah.
Or you hear the birds, you're like, these bloody birds, like, why are they so early? Like,
yeah.
So, Lung Club, mate. So, you've obviously got your website.
Yeah.
Is that the best place to find you? You've got Instagram.
Yeah, follow Instagram, it's probably where most of the stuff comes through. But if you're living in the eastern suburbs, we do a run club every Thursday morning, 6 a.m., North Bondi Surf Club. Always happy to chat if anyone wants to reach out through Instagram, and encourage everyone to just train the lungs, help the mind.
And, have you ever thought of doing it, like obviously you're just doing it in person, eastern suburbs just now. Have you ever thought of trying to grow the movement? Like,
yeah, I've got some mates. So I'm from London, and well, lived in London before. I've got some mates back there who were doing a little run club back there. Yeah, it'd be good. It'd be good to grow. The thing is, I think there are, you know, I didn't set it up to become the run club around the world. And I think there are, you know, even in Sydney, there's great little run clubs. So if you live somewhere else and you want some advice on another one to join, more than happy to advise on that too. But I think for me it's around the messaging and the awareness and that just a global community of people who want to move their bodies and help their minds.
Got some good, I'm just looking at your little shop here as well. You've got some t-shirts and some hats as well, mate. Look.
Yeah, bit of kit. I always think it's a funny how often you'd be wearing one and someone, you just need one person to say, oh, what's that? And it just gives you a chance to have a conversation about mental health. How does that, like,
that's good. It's another
opportunity.
Yeah, the merch is good. I was looking at it as well, the caps and stuff. I was going to say, like, that's a real thing in the triathlon world, right? All the cool hats and, like, the caps.
Oh,
right?
Yeah.
I feel like you can't be a triathlete unless you have, like, this cool triathlete hat. Like, you know? I might get one, but then I'm running at, like, 5 minute kilometer pace. And everyone's like, nah, this fella's a spoofer. I'll look at it. It's been really good to chat to you. I think, you know, two guys, another guy, like, it's quite inspirational what you're doing. And it's also something that I don't feel like it's necessarily a massively complex thing, but like, I think I can see, you know, when you look in on what you're doing, like it's very inspiring and makes you want to get out and, you know, my lesson from this whole thing is to get back into a bit of a routine, which is often hard when you get thrown a baby, but that's also just a mental challenge that you kind of put against your own self. And it is as simple as just, I know it could be getting up a little bit earlier. So I've certainly been able to take some things back into my own life. So I just want to say, yeah, fair play to you. And, you know, keep doing what you're doing.
Hi, mate. Thanks, boys. Great guest to have on, mate. Nice little bit of difference and class to hear your story. And Long Club, if anyone's in Eastern Suburbs, jump on it. Superb, mate. Nice to talk to you.
Thanks so much, boys. Really enjoyed that and love what you're doing here as well. It's just another great, great avenue to be raising awareness and, yeah, massive respect for what you're doing.
Well, whenever my dodgy hamstring is fixed, I will join you on one of those Thursday morning runs, I swear.
We'll get back up the dingle.
Is there an over 35s or a club or a slower pace group?
You'll be more than quick enough for us, don't you worry.
I was just going to say that. It is obviously, if anyone is listening, they want to go running and they need a bit of motivation. Is it all just people who are like really good runners, or you've got
No. And every run is, you know, we'll you can split up and rejoin. Any pace is welcome.
Okay, sweet.
Any pace.
Quality, mate.
Great.
Awesome. All right then, boys. Thanks
for joining. See you, mate. Bye.
Bye.
Don't forget to follow us on all the social media channels, including Instagram and Twitter, @theselandsaremental. And if you do have a topic or a guest or subject that you want us to talk about, please do get in touch and send in your suggestions. Thanks for joining us on today's show. As mentioned at the beginning, if you are struggling with mental health, please do seek further assistance. Here's who you can get support from: Lifeline, Beyond Blue, Bitsier, and the Black Dog Institute.